Welcome to Deep Talk, the podcast for advanced English learners who are looking to explore something a little bit deeper. Hello and welcome to episode 28 of Deep Talk. I took an impromptu month off after the last episode. I was just exhausted and overwhelmed and had managed to get completely stuck in a rut of inaction. So I took some time off from posting on social media, from recording and editing these podcasts, and focused on surrounding myself with good people and took the time to recover. And now we are back and raring to go. This week, we are listening to my conversation with Nicola Prentice, who runs a beginner investor course for people, especially folks who are coming from low-paid industries, who want to learn how to best invest their money and make it work for them. We talk today about the assumptions that her clients often have around money, the stereotypes and limiting beliefs they often bring to the course, Nicola's own journey into investing, and her number one tip for someone who's entirely new to the process of investing. As always, you can let me know what you think about the episode and your experience with money demons. All my contact details are in the episode description. One thing before I go, Nicola wanted me to let you know that while her May version of the course has already begun, if you were to contact her ASAP, like this weekend, it might be possible to join at the end of week one and just catch up with what you've missed. If that's a bit quick for you though, the next date she'll be running it is in October. Okay, enough of me. On with this week's Deep Talk. Hi, Nicola. Welcome to Deep Talk. Before we go any further, could you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Hi, I'm Nicola Prentice and I teach a beginner investing course. But before that, I used to write educational materials for English language learners. And before that, I was an English teacher.
Fantastic. Excellent. So investing is what we're here to talk about today. And I'm sure we're going to get more into the kind of technicalities of how do you invest and what is investing. But I'm interested, you run, as you said, this beginner's course. What kind of assumptions and beliefs have you come across when speaking to the people who are joining your course?
Well, the two big ones are that people wrongly believe that you need to have a lot of money because investing is for rich people. And that's completely not true because small amounts grow and they grow in the same way that they grow for rich people. Yes, of course, if you've got lots of money, you will have more at the end. But the point is that you can have more money than you have now by investing it. And that's true for everybody. Even if you put in a euro a day, in 20 years, you would have thousands and thousands of pounds. So it's always possible to grow money, no matter what you start with. And the other thing is people think it's difficult, complicated, not for them. And that's usually because they've got the wrong idea of what investing is. Because investing is actually more like things like pensions. It's very easy to understand, right? But only when somebody explains it for you, because there's so much information that it's really difficult to just know where to start. And so I taught myself. I know how hard that is. So I make it simple for people, because the truth is actually it's really easy. And people get to the end of the course sometimes and they're like, oh, is that it? Yes, that's it. Is this easy?
Well, yeah, I definitely have both of those beliefs in my head. I mean, I've been following you on social media for a little bit, so like you're starting to chip away. Your content is like slowly chipping away at some of those beliefs. But yeah, I think especially that idea of saving a little bit, because I mean, saving isn't, would you equate saving and investing? That's actually a question.
They're two sides of the same coin. And I think that a lot of the time, me included, this was my weakness. People will save money and they think, yeah, I'm doing enough. But if you don't invest what you save, it's not enough, because that money's just sitting there and it's getting slowly eaten away by inflation. So it's losing value. So you can't save your way to retirement or, you know, anything like that. You can't save your way to big changes in your life, but you can save plus invest. So there's no investing without saving, but saving on its own is not enough.
Got it. Yeah, because I think that I've worked in ELT since I was 22, so you can probably guess what my finances are like. Yep. It's not, at least in kind of many parts of Europe and certainly in the UK, it's not a super lucrative industry. There are obviously ways of making money within it, and that's something that as a ELT entrepreneur I'm starting to learn, mm-hmm. although I haven't quite got to the money stages yet. But the idea of saving has always seemed like just an utter waste of time for me.
Exactly.
Because I'm like, what could I possibly save? Like, what have I got at the end of the month? 30 quid? 50 quid? Yeah. Like, what could I possibly do with that? And when I look back to 22-year-old me, I'm like, well, I could do something with it now, 10 years mm-hmm. later. But I think the kind of maybe short-sightedness with those kinds of numbers is, I think it's a really, really easy trap to fall into.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the trap I fell into as well. It's exactly what you said. It's this seems pointless. If I save, so what? And it's true to a large extent. If you save, so what? Because I saved. I was a very good saver, but I got to older than you and I couldn't have bought a house. It wasn't enough for a deposit. It was never mm-hmm. going to be enough for a deposit. Yeah. I could have saved really hard and it still wouldn't have happened. So it's that if you start investing, and people in their 20s are exactly who I would love to help the most, because those people, you've just sorted them out for the rest of their life. It's not impossible to help people when they're older, but they've got less time, and time is mm-hmm. the thing that makes the difference.
So you've obviously kind of already said the two big things, and they're just not true.
Right.
What kind of resistance do your clients have to that? Like, does it take them a while? I guess perhaps like me, they've had a bit of chipping away from your content, your newsletters, stuff like that. So they're not coming to you at zero. No. But does it take them a while to really start believing that that a little bit does matter and that it's not that complicated?
It takes them a really long time. And I don't know exactly if it's that I don't think it's that it takes them a long time to believe me exactly. It's that the next hurdle is actually bigger than those two, because the next hurdle is fear. And we are so scared of money, especially in a profession like ELT. And I think if you're a student at university is probably when you start feeling that fear, because mm-hmm. typically you don't have any money then. And then if you also go into a profession that doesn't pay very well, that stays. So what you know is hardship. And what you know is maybe feeling insecure or worried about the future and then just going, right, I just won't think about it. And so it's overcoming that that's the block for people. And I honestly think that some people will take years to come round to the idea, because unfortunately to solve the problem, you've got to confront it. And that's asking a lot of people. Once they've got to the point where they're just like, I'm going to do something about this, the rest of it's easy. But it's the fear, and we are so wired anyway from our childhood, you know, whatever your parents' attitudes to money were, your situation growing up, that's all in there as well. And it's so unpicking all of that is a big thing for people.
I was going to ask, where do these beliefs come from? Is it, do you think in your case, you've come across most people getting it from their parents?
Yeah. So for a start, your parents probably didn't teach you anything about investing because they didn't know it themselves, or it's the kind of family which is again perfectly normal where money just wasn't spoken about because it wasn't nice, and so you start with a situation where you weren't taught about money. And then if you've come from a background where money was scarce, I grew up in a single parent family, and I certainly knew that we didn't have a lot of money, so that increases your fear of it. If any of those childhood memories make that something that you're frightened of, and then maybe something that's not talked about, and then maybe something that you don't know the solution for anyway. But I think even people who come from money can learn a lot of dangerous things about, you know, spending money. You know, maybe their parents just wasted money all the time, and that meant that there was a kind of feeling of insecurity of like, okay, we had money yesterday, but we spent it, now what? So there is no kind of background, probably, that's not many people have got the kind of background where they've got a completely healthy attitude towards money. And if they have, they probably already were investing, because they will have, you know, opened an ISA if they were in the UK or something, you know, basic or whatever, but nothing complicated. But they will have probably done something about it. And they're not the people that need to hear what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course. And what messages do you think society is telling us about money? Is society a bit better than our parents? A bit worse? No, the same?
No. No, society, think how many expressions you know. Money is the root of all evil. You know, think of rich people in films. They're always the bad guy. Lex Luthor, mm-hmm. the, you know, in Superman, you've got Ebenezer Scrooge, you've got so many, you know, you've got the rich bitch if it's women, and the miserable miser if it's men, or, you know, what's the film, Wolf of Wall Street, mm-hmm. you know, excess power. So you're getting bad. And look at the government. Like, most of the time in most countries, the people that are in charge have come from money, and mm-hmm. then they just go and they fleece everybody else and get as much money as they can out of you and the system. So we don't have any really good examples of what money does to you.
And I'm presuming that you don't believe that those examples are the only examples out there. It's just perhaps that those are the ones we're seeing. Those are the ones that we're talking about.
Yes, because people who are comfortable and, you know, I don't know, own a house and have a pension, that's not worth talking about, is it? Because it's boring. And those people are just quietly, comfortably getting on with their lives with a normal amount of worries about money. Mm-hmm. But there's no story there. The story is in the extremes. The rich people, the poor people, and our people in the middle. It's like, boring.
So you've alluded a little bit to, you know, you said you shared some of these beliefs, this was your problem. Can you share a little bit about your story into investing? Like, what was your journey?
Right. So first of all, I want to say that I don't have any kind of finance background, because that's another thing that people think, is that you must at least have studied something like maths or mm-hmm. finance or economics. So I had a degree in philosophy and you know, chose an arts kind of route and English teaching, and then I became a writer, and my values are all very much in that education artist type of mm-hmm. place. But I was saving because I was very insecure about money, so I'd hoard it like a mm-hmm. dragon. And I just, my sister used to nag me quite a lot about, have you got a pension? And I'd just be like, what? Boring. Yeah. You know, and that just started to penetrate, really. And so I said, right, okay, I have got savings, but I can't buy a house. Mm-hmm. So what do I do instead? And I really didn't even know where to start looking for the answers to that. But I asked somebody, a friend who knew about investing and money stuff, and I asked him, and he gave me an answer that I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. But at least I now knew, okay, if I find out what he meant by this, this, and this. Because he literally gave me bullet points. There was point one, point two, point three. I didn't understand them, but I knew where to go and start. And it was that started me off. But I don't know. I guess it was just a niggling fear that finally couldn't be ignored any longer.
And how long would you say that niggling fear pestered you before you listened to it?
Oh, God. I mean, years. Yeah. A decade or more. But you know, I always knew, but the problem with TEFL and ELT is that there's a kind of pride in not having a lot of money, because mm-hmm. you can proudly say, I'm not materialistic and I live for the day, you know, I live for today, and travel and experiences are more important to me than you know, it's like the choice is between being materialistic or, you know, being a complete bohemian. But it's the extremes. But the middle ground is just have experiences, don't spend your money on things if you don't want to, spend it on, you know, things that make you feel secure, or put some of it away and watch it grow so that you can work less. I mean, it's the middle stuff that just doesn't get talked about.
Yeah, because that's that belief about ELT, and I'm sure it's true in lots of professions where money is not the driver.
Definitely. Nursing's got to be one.
Yeah. Where it's that flip side of the rich is bad narrative. It's like poor is good.
Noble.
Poor is honest. Noble. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I'm definitely, I mean, when I started my own business, one of the big journeys was recognizing that actually financially I was quite ambitious. And that was something that I had never acknowledged before, probably because it was never an option. Mm. You know, working in language schools I could hope to maybe make £20,000 a year, and that was supplementing my income with like a second
job. Oh yeah, I mean that's a high salary.
I know, right?
ELT. Yeah.
Exactly. And therefore kind of I might on a crazy year have gone, maybe one day I'll make 25 and that would be really exciting. And sure, for many people that's a lot of money and you can do a lot with 25 and blah blah blah, but to recognize that maybe wanting more money didn't make me a bad person, it didn't make me not care for my clients or want the best for them, it was actually that I was able to give people value and maybe I could ask for money in return. That was a huge journey and it's definitely one that I'm still on. Mm-hmm. That poor is good, rich is bad is very, very strong in my mind, 100%. So when it came to working through the sort of blocks, did you get any support for that, or was that just a slow process of trial and error? And
it was a slow process of trial and error. I tried a couple of things, like I arranged a meeting with a financial advisor who specialised in foreigners living in Spain, which is my context. Mm-hmm. But because she was going to charge me £750 to set up the thing, and actually that was her half price deal, I just too much of a money hoarder for that. I was just, 750? No way was I going to hand that over. And thank God I didn't, because the fees that they would have charged me, takes a longer time to explain it than I've got now, but the fees that you are paying on anything that you are investing in is absolutely critical, because that eats away thousands over your lifetime. So, you know, I'm very, it was just luck that I didn't go with her because I didn't want to spend the money. And then I had a friend who at the same time, by coincidence, was looking into learning about investing, and she did a course and I chose not to. Because again, probably because I didn't want to spend the money, I don't know. But I said, right, okay, let's set up a WhatsApp chat and we can talk about investing. But it quickly became clear that what I was learning by myself was better than what she was learning on the course. She was coming to me for advice because her course just wasn't that great. And, you know, why? I don't know. I don't know anything about the course.
Yeah, you're now obviously a course creator in this field. It is upsetting to hear that there are courses out there that people are investing their money in thinking, I'm going to learn what I need. And then, obviously your course is great and everyone should get your course, but what should people be looking for when they're trying to find information about investing?
I think the thing that people do is they just Google, or maybe they come across somebody in a Facebook group, which, you know, to be honest, the second way is somewhere that people might find me. But I think you just need to hang around in that person's orbit for a while. You know, mm-hmm. what do they say in their emails and newsletters? What do the testimonials say from the clients? And I think actually it is just you get a feel for the person. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the person who gave this course, but the difference, I think the big difference, is that my background is in education and educational materials writing. Mm-hmm. So pedagogically, I know how to structure a course so that learning occurs. I don't just deliver some webinars and expect everybody to be able to do it. I've got revision, concept checking, and, you know, vocabulary revision. It's because it's that stuff that makes you learn. But, you know, I also think my friend is a type of person that acts without thinking. And there were a load of other things wrong with what she then did with their money, because her and her husband refused to speak about it with each other. I mean, there's a big problem there.
That's a big red flag.
You know, exactly. So it was more complicated than just the course. But, you know, like I said, she started coming to me for advice, and maybe she would have done my course if it had existed at that point. I don't know, but
I'm going to ask you to share some of that advice in just a second. But before we do, keep selling this like transformation. Tell me, what are like the clearest benefits that you have experienced as a result of now investing?
Okay. The most tangible one is just the money that I've made. Okay. There are two types of investing that I teach, if you want to call it that way. It's all low risk. It's all passive investing. It's not speculating or watching the stock market and buying and selling. It's not, that's not investing actually. It's speculating, but anyway, and it's trading. But what I do is some of my money is in things like the stock market, where the point is about growth. Mm-hmm. And then some of the other things are where invested in things where the point is income. Okay. That pays out. So the stock market doesn't pay out income in that way. A little bit it can, but this is, these other products are mainly about that. So last year I earned about 3,100 euros from the passive income
wow.
pot, and I did nothing for that money. And for me, that's you know, a very good month's wages.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's like a, you know, that's like I've paid myself this year to take a holiday. Now, in actual fact, I'm going to reinvest that pot. I'm not mm-hmm. taking it out because I want it to grow. But mm-hmm. That's the most tangible thing is like, and I get emails from these different platforms every day telling me how much money I've earned. So a daily reminder of, you know, they're little amounts, but it adds up. So that's the first one. But the second one is just the empowerment of understanding a whole aspect of the world that is around us all the time. And then understanding it. And I have this effect comes back even while I'm still teaching the course. Students will start sending me articles that they've come across in the, you know, just in the news, whatever, Guardian or even the Times or something. And they will send me the article and they'll be like, I understand all of this. And before I wouldn't even have clicked on it. People who start being able to have conversations with their fathers, for example, two people mm-hmm. have said that to me. So it's, it gives them an extra opportunity to bond because, you know, maybe money wasn't talked about in their family, but their father does have investments and a pension and, you know, all of that stuff. And yeah. typically the father was the one managing it in these cases, at least. And, mm-hmm. And it, so it's opened that up. So it's knowledge. So knowledge and money. I mean, what else do you want?
That's a pretty good result. Absolutely. So let's jump on to the advice. An absolute beginner investor maybe has a tiny bit in savings, but not loads. What do they do?
It's very hard because really to make a decision about what to do, you need to know what the things are. And so it's hard for me okay. to say to somebody, go and do this. But if you were going to choose one thing, it would be open a pension and make sure that you understand in the country where you are, what are the tax breaks for having a private pension? Because that is effectively free money as well. It means you're going to pay less tax. So if you just find out what that benefit is, and then you go and open something. But again, the problem is often people will just go to their bank that they bank with normally, mm-hmm. and that bank product pension will actually have quite a high fee. So it's not the one that you should really be opening, because it would be much better to know enough to look around for something with a lower fee.
Got it.
So I can't give a really complete answer because you do need to learn mm-hmm. what it is, because most people don't even realize a pension is an investment. It's literally invested in the stock market and bonds and maybe real estate. Mm-hmm. But if you don't understand what those three things are, I think you've just switched off over, yep. you know, so
absolutely.
You have to know what they are. And when you know what they are, you understand it. Super simple. It's just not super simple to work it out by yourself.
And if, because lots of our listeners will be employed and lots of employers provide pensions, would you recommend getting another pension on top of that?
Absolutely. The
okay.
reason, if you are lucky enough to have a workplace pension on offer, and in the UK you are automatically enrolled and you have to mm-hmm. opt out, and a lot of people who don't know opt out and they think, brilliant, I'm getting that money back, but you are shooting yourself in the foot. So workplace pension is the best thing you could possibly have, because your employer has to pay into it. And sometimes, depending on the system, if you increase your contributions, your employer has to match it. So not only are you now putting money somewhere it'll grow, somebody else is putting money in where it'll grow. And now you've just got free, even more free money. So absolutely take the workplace pension. And in some countries, even a short-term temporary job entitles you to a workplace pension, but they might not tell you that. So you want to know, is there actually a requirement here? And if I ask, do they have to give me one? And sometimes the answer is yes. And even though it'll be small, 20 years time it'll grow.
Yeah. So pension is your kind of big,
I think so,
the big one. Anything
because
else?
It's investing with tax breaks, And right. it's the one that, you know, pretty much every country will have some form mm-hmm. of. Because if I say to you, open an ISA, that only applies to people in the UK. Yeah. But if you're in the UK, you want an ISA.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So that sounds to me like, yes, pension, but also learn a little bit, do a little bit mm-hmm. of reading. In yeah. the UK, who's that guy? It's Martin Lewis.
Yes.
What's the website that he runs?
Money Saving Expert. Yes, yeah. That's a brilliant site. I get his emails every week.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. I think he is only talking about the UK context. Obviously, listeners yes. outside of that, it's going to be irrelevant. But if there are people living in the UK, become familiar with Martin Lewis, Money yep. Saving Expert. Whenever I'm looking to like open a new account or mm-hmm. change over, I'm like, what does Martin say? Yeah. go and take his advice, because his blog, his website is just, and it's regularly updated, and he's mm-hmm. got like a little team, and he's
yeah,
great.
Very, very ethical.
Yes, he is. It's because that's another thing, I think, when we talked about the assumptions around investments, we often think about like investments in arms dealing and fossil fuels and mm-hmm. and perhaps even the assumption that if you opt out of those more negative things, you get less money, because those, I don't know, you can get investing some things where you don't, like green
yeah, you can.
I don't know,
ethical investing and green
That's
investing
it.
Now that is a module on my course, because it's a bit greenwashing. They can put that label on stuff and you can assume, oh, that means it's not investing in any of those bad things. It's a lot more complicated. Well, it's more complicated than that. It's easy mm-hmm. for me to explain in one module, but it's not the case that you have just ticked the box and now you're not invested in anything you don't agree with, because the way that those things are structured right. is open to interpretation.
Got it. Okay, gosh, the bank's not being entirely honest with us. How refreshing. Okay, so that's one of the modules. Tell us a little bit, before we draw this conversation to an end, about this course and how people can join if they're interested.
Right, okay, so my website is www.chilledinvestor.com, because chilled, relaxed, no stress, yeah. And that is the main place to see what the course is about, but you can find me on LinkedIn. Is the mm-hmm. main place that I hang out. So that's Nicola Prentice. Awesome. But the course itself is just starting again now. And I will probably run it again in October. But people can put a deposit down on that if they want. Some people already have, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's that thing where people need longer. So there are mm-hmm. people that were going to do it now, but then they're like, oh, I just need a little bit longer to make this decision. And so I yeah. see that all the time. So that's the main way to find it, but it's going to run again later.
Amazing. Yeah, I'll pop all those links in the episode description as well, so people can find you really easily. Nicola, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for kicking me up the bum about getting a pension, because I still don't have one. And I will get one, I promise.
You don't have to say, especially you don't have to say it on air, but how old are you?
I'm 31.
Right, it's a great time. You know, you're not too late, and you're not at the age where you're going to have to speed this up a bit by putting more money in. You can do it, and you can, you know, you've got like 35, 37, 36 years until you reach state retirement age. That's a very significant amount of time.
Okay, thank you very much for that encouragement. All right, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
My thanks once again to Nicola for sharing that advice, and as I said at the beginning, if you're interested in the course she's running and want to do it as soon as possible, get in touch with Nicola immediately. Week one of her program has started, but she said that since the first live session isn't until week three, there is some wiggle room if anyone wanted to jump right in. Before we go, I also wanted to give a shout out to the wonderful Marta, Max, Laura, Anastasia, Sabina and Vicky, who came along to this month's Deep Talkers meetup this week. We were talking about the last episode, overthinking, and as always, had a wonderful time. If you're looking for a low-pressure environment to use your English to talk about interesting topics with interesting people, it really is a no-brainer. It's just a couple of quid a month. I wanted to keep it as easy access as possible. Our next meeting will be in the third week of June, and anyone who is in the group at that time will be welcome to join. you can find the link to the Patreon in the show notes. One final thing, those of you who receive my newsletter will already know about this, but I am running a live coaching event on June the 3rd. Completely free, everyone welcome. I'll be working with 3 or 4 volunteers and coaching them through a particular struggle they have with their relationship with English. You can sign up on my website. Okay, that's it, I promise. It was lovely to be back and speak with you all again. I've been Rhiannon. This has been Deep Talk. Have a wonderful day.